So I thought, what could possibly go wrong with me living in a two-bedroom in the attic apartment with a unsupervised 15-year-old beneath me?
He was in the hotel, and who does he cross paths with but the realtor for the house in Annapolis?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hinken.
And this week on the podcast, in honor of our nation's independence, Con Job, two stories about people being duped.
Wait, that's weird. Do you think there's a tie-in there of like cons and like this is like around the 4th of July, right?
Yeah.
Huh. That's weird. Well, okay. Anyway, so our first story is from Len Van de Graaff, and he told this story, you know, about trying to figure out a place to live after you're going through a divorce and you're just, you know, you need to find a nice place for you and your kid. So take a listen.
This story takes place in 2016. I was desperately in search of an apartment for my 5-year-old son and I. I had separated from my ex-wife, and we'd been living in the same house for 6 months, and I really needed to get out. I'm sure no one here has been in that situation. So it wasn't going well. We were still paying a mortgage, and I had a limited budget. So I was hitting all of the apartment rental sites. And finally, you know, after seeing many apartments over the six-month period, I went to Craigslist, knowing that that was a dubious prospect at best. But the apartments I was seeing were like, I remember one in particular near Mica. I arrived with high hopes. I liked the neighborhood. And the hallway smelled bad. There was like random junk mail spilling out of a bowl at in the foyer. The apartment was clearly occupied by more people than it should and hadn't been cleaned in a couple of different tenancies. Another one was a Charles Village apartment in one of those cool painted row homes, and I had high hopes for that one, and I went in, and there was like weird division of rooms. There was linoleum in the living room halfway, and then floor, and I really wanted an apartment that would be like a new start for Al and I. He was 5. I was like the main caretaker, and I knew it was going to just sort of blow up his life for me to move out of our house, so I was holding out for something decent. So I kept looking at Craigslist and the other places, and one day I came across an ad that had this subject line, $1,100 or $600 a month. Two bedrooms, Roland Park.
Yeah, baby.
Now, just to show you how desperate I was, I clicked on that quick. And it turned out that there were actual pictures, not the sort of photoshopped images of a full 5-bedroom house rent to own that I was seeing with great frequency on Craigslist. There were actual pictures, and I saw like hardwood floors, windows, and I thought to myself, this can't be true. But I texted the number and got a text right back from this guy, Ron, and he said he wanted to show me the place. He sent me the address, and it was on Roland Avenue between Northern Parkway and Lake. And I thought, he's going to want a security deposit up front, and I'm not going to get into that building somehow. But I show up, and it's one of those Great Gatsby mansions on that strip there. And he's shown me to a side door that has like a keypad. I put it in, and I go up, and it's this staircase that's in the house but separated from the house. I go up, I think it was like 35 or 38 steps. I'm looking at my girlfriend trying to remember. No access to the main house, but I go up to the attic, and there's the landlord, Ron, the owner of the house, and he meets me outside of a door in this attic hallway, and there is a 2-bedroom apartment that he has converted because he was separated from his wife and was living in the house. So we had a moment of a chuckle about that. But it was as he pictured it. Wood floors. One of the rooms was in the turret of the mansion. The vaulted ceiling. Al's room had these little cute gabled windows and a lot of floor space. The kitchen was carpeted, which was odd. But so I got to the most germane question, which is, so 1,100 or 600? What's the deal, Ron? So it turns out Ron was a motivational speaker, an organizational consultant who was traveling a lot, and he had a 15-year-old son who was was a sophomore at a local private school. And he needed an adult in the house. So in my thinking, of course, I'm like, yeah, I'm an adult. I'm a dad. Like, I got this. So what I needed to do was be there to let contractors in if work was being done on the house, or let the cleaners in, and also just be an adult present during the week when Ron was traveling and doing motivational speaking, which was a lot of the time. And I was supposed to drop his son Eamon off at school and pick him up when he needed it. So I thought, what could possibly go wrong with me living in a two-bedroom in the attic apartment with a unsupervised 15-year-old beneath me? So I actually remember thinking, maybe I'll be like a mentor figure. Maybe he'll be really jazzed to have me around. Well, then I met Eamon, and this is throwing no shade at Eamon, but he was, 15, didn't know me. He was a pale, skinny kid who just didn't want to have anything to do with me. That was pretty clear. But I was like, all right, I'm going to be the responsible adult. So painted my vaulted ceiling blue and got some Pokemon decals for Al's room. And we put them up together and got a cat and started living there. And it was everything I wanted it to be. We were walking around in the neighborhood and just having a new start to our life that wasn't fraught with, everything that had come before. Couple nights in, I will say, I was going up my little 35 or 38 steps to the third floor, and I caught the distinct aroma of weed. And I was like, all right, he didn't ask me. I did have a moment where I was like, so where's the line here in terms of responsible adult and, like, actually being responsible? But I was like, all right. So life went on. Occasionally I'd have to text Eamon and be like, and these are made up names, just to be clear. I would text Eamon and say, hey, maybe you could smoke somewhere else in the house. We're getting it pretty strong tonight. But other than that, things were pretty calm, So 6 months went by and life was good. And then I'd met someone and we were going away for our first trip together. I remember I had the suitcase open on my bed, all neatly packed. I was literally about to close it, and I get a call from Ron. And he's like, Len, there's intruders in the house. And I knew Eamon was home, and his college-age sister was also home. So I said, all right, what's going on? He's like, I don't know. He said they're in the house and they're armed. And I was like, oh, shit. And it turned out, very quickly started to think, all right, here's a kid who's buying weed. We're in Baltimore. Who knows what the chain of events that has led to people being in the house right now? Or maybe it's just that we're in a big house and people have come in to rob the place. Who knows? But I was wishing in that moment that I had waited another 15 minutes before returning that call or answering it. But I was in the house and I couldn't let myself leave without helping. So Ron says, yeah, Addison's locked in the second floor bathroom, Eamon's older sister. Can you see what's going on? And it was one of those moments where I was like thinking Al could be fatherless or I could help, And I was like really feeling sort of a moral tug. But I went to this, there was an inner staircase that led into the house and there was a glass and I looked through the glass, and Addison was down there. Her dad must have told her that I was going to look down. And she's got the second floor bathroom, and she's beckoning me down. So I'm like, oh, shit. So I go down the stairs, close the bathroom door behind us, and lock it. And we still have really no idea what's going on. I'm imagining guys with guns downstairs and Eamon facing them. I pass my phone, where Ron's still on the phone. I pass it to Addison. I take her phone and call 911. And things just kept getting more and more real. The 911 operator is saying, so who's in the house? Are they armed? You know, what's the situation? And I kept thinking, I have no idea. You know, I'm whispering. And I said, we think the 15-year-old is downstairs with the intruders. We're locked in the second floor bathroom. Please send someone quickly. Addison looked at me. She's crouched behind the medicine cabinet. She's saying, you know, I have all my whole life ahead of me. And in that moment, I'm thinking, like, I feel the same way, but at the same time, I'm thinking, like, I know that's something she's going to regret saying later, you know, like, so she said it for the both of us. But anyway, it goes quiet. I'm not hearing gunshots. I'm not hearing violence. But I'm also not hearing sirens. Suddenly, we hear running up the stairs, and I say, oh, shit, this is it? This is really happening. And I hear Eamon's voice saying, help me, they're gone. Come on, get out of there, help me. So we open the bathroom door and he's running down the hall with a box full of bongs and other paraphernalia. And he's tearing to his room. And he's like, help me hide the stuff, help me hide the stuff. So in that moment, already sort of like juiced up on adrenaline and feeling like I was doing the right thing, I was like, all right, I went into a dad fixer mode. Like, I'm going to help this kid through this. The cops are on their way. We start opening windows and spraying the house down. Ron is still on the phone with his daughter. She passes me the phone. I'm like, he's okay. It looks like they left. I'm trying to get the story from him right now. And Ron's telling me, you know what? I told him to stop dealing. Yeah, all right. So aside from hiding all this stuff, Eamon was trying to erase the indoor cam so that they wouldn't see the $1,000 of weed that he was packing into baggies to bring to his private school. I'm opening windows, and I'm waiting for the police to come. They finally come. I go and open the door, and I explain very quickly, I'm just the tenant upstairs. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but the kids are in here. So these two detectives and two Baltimore police officers come in, and when I tell you, it was a whole different vibe. They come into the kitchen, and Eamon had his friend, who we'll call Skippy, there. They both look like they're in seventh grade, and they're sitting on the countertop, and these police officers just make a semicircle around them. One, two, three, four. And they're just looking at him, and they're like, all right, boys, what happened here tonight? So Eamon goes into a story. Well, I had my birthday money out on a coffee table, and these two guys came in wearing ghost masks with plastic swords, and one of them punched me in the head. There's a long pause. We get the crustiest of stares from the police officers. They can see through all of us in that moment. And they say, son, you know, home invasion is a very serious crime. Someone could have gotten killed here tonight, so why don't you tell us what really happened? That's what happened, I'm telling you. Ghost masks, plastic swords. And it's very clear to them, as it's becoming clear to me, that it's some kids from the school that have come in. So Addison takes aim into the police leave. They take a report. Addison takes aim into the emergency room. And we all live to see another day. About 3 months later, Ron, talking to me about that night, says, you know, I really think a lot about that night. And I'm thinking, yeah, maybe you shouldn't be traveling so much. He says, I think maybe Eamon should have a gun. It was at that point that I realized I needed to move out. I think what I take from that story is actually that there were three cons. One was me conning myself, that it was okay to be in loco parentis without doing any parentising. The second con was maybe more a wishful thinking con, which was Ron thinking it was okay to leave me in that position and leave his son alone all week. and not tell me about it. And the last con I just touched on was kind of conning himself that any of it was really okay. So that's it. That's the story as it happened. Thank you.
So when I was talking to Len, when he first shared this story, in my mind I was like, I think I really know this family. Because the story all takes place in Roland Park, where we live. And yeah, I think I know this family. So, and it turns out I know this family. And that's all I'll say about that.
Well done with the small tomorrow story. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break and be back with another story for this week's episode.
Okay, so this is Stacy, and she shared this just as an audience storyteller for the same show that where Len shared his story. And it's so sweet. She's just talking about how in the early aughts, she was on a dating site, and, you know, things went a little bit south. Take a listen.
Back in the 2000 aughts, I was on this dating site, and it was designed for people who were interested in meeting people who were of different cultures and ethnic backgrounds. And so I have my little profile up there, and this guy DMs me, and he says, "You are so beautiful, you are so amazing, you are so incredible." And it's like, yeah, I guess I am, and that sounds fabulous. And he was gorgeous. I mean, just fabulously gorgeous. So he sent me these two pictures, and one picture was of him just looking demure and striking and, you know, George Clooney kind of handsome. And then there was this other picture of him in the shower, like with his head back and looking all like something from a semi-porn thing. So I was like, whoa, look at that guy. But something said, wait just a gosh darn minute. He's like too beautiful. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's like, he's just so freaking gorgeous. But I'm just chilling. So I'll just play along, so to speak. So, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, you're so this. Oh, it's so nice to meet you. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Tell me about yourself. Blah, blah, blah. And so we're emailing, or whatever you call it, back and forth. What it's inboxing, whatever you call it. And then he starts to tell me, and this is like going on for, let's say, like a week and a half. And then he starts to tell me about, I just am magical to him. I've never met anybody like you before. I just can't live without you. And it's like, what? Okay, but I'll play along because, well, I'm just kind of chilling. What else? You see what's going on. So then he sends me this picture of this gorgeous house in Annapolis. And he says, this is the house I'm going to buy for you, for us to spend our lives in. And I'm like, I don't even know if that house exists. So, you know, you do a little Google search, image search or whatever. I don't see this house or whatever. So now I'm really like, I think this is going to, well, I know what he's up to. But again, I'm not doing anything. I'm just kind of chilling. So I'm just going to play along with it. So because I'm not really in as the way he wants me to be. So he says, so what do you think of the house? I'm like, oh, it's gorgeous, and Annapolis is such a highly sought after place to be, and it's just a beautiful town, and blah 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 blah. So we're playing along on emailing back and forth. So then he says, so Stacy, my heart is so full of you and all how amazing you are and this connection that we've made. And so what you know, so I'm gonna need to put the down payment down on the house in Annapolis. And so, you know, but I have to talk to the realtor first, and then I'll get some information for you, and I'll get back to you. Gotcha, dude, gotcha. So then, a couple more days go by, and he sends me a message talking about the house, but he needs to do a little traveling. So I'm all in on the fun of it all. So I said, so dude, like where are you from? And he says, I'm from. What did he say he was from? His parents were. His father was Russian, his mother was Mexican, and they created him. Now he just now no not this is not any kind of shit. He's just like a regular good-looking white guy. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. So I'm saying to myself, your father's Russian, your mother's Mexican. How the blinkety blink did they meet? And, you know, there's colleges, and people go to college from all over the place, and so that made sense, but then it just seemed kind of weird, and the picture didn't look like a Mexican person and a Russian person mixed together and made this person. Because I'm thinking about that shower picture, remember? So, fast forward to another couple of days, and again, he's just deeply in love. I must have you, Stacy, you're the greatest thing that ever walked the face of this earth. And he says that he's getting ready to take a business trip. I said, what kind of work do you do, dude? He says, I work in construction with masonry. And it's like, okay, that's kind of interesting. And so he says that he's on a business trip, and he's in, of all places, North Dakota. And would you believe he was in the hotel, and who does he cross paths with but the realtor for the house in Annapolis? And he says, Stacy, would you believe that happened? And I'm like, oh, hell no. But I'm still playing because I think it's kind of fun. I'm like, dude, really? And he's like, yes. And if you just send me $20,000... then I can put a down payment on our dream home, the home that we're going to build a life together in, and then all will be great. So I said, hold on, dude. You're in North Dakota? No shade to North Dakota. But I don't know what kind of construction, masonry, rock constructing, you know, boulder needing business is going on in North Dakota. No shade to North Dakota. I just don't know. And it just seemed like such a, out of all the places to pick, he could have said Baltimore, you know, he could have said Philly. He was like North Dakota. So now I'm in, so I call my best friend who he always goes into my mayhem and foolishness. And I was like, yo, Stefan. So I'm talking to this guy and he says he wants me to give him $20,000. So what he wanted me to do was to deposit the $20,000 in this account. And then he would give the money from the account to the realtor guy, and then we would be able to put the down payment on the house. So I said to Stefan, I don't have $20,000. So how does this work? Like, how does this scam work? Like, you put the 20, where do you put the 20? It's not going to cover, my account is not going to cover that. I got like $3,000. Like, how's that going to work? So he's like, I don't know. We're just trying to like brainstorm on how this scam is going to work out. We never did figure it out. So if any of y'all know, just because we've always been curious about this. Years later, we still have a conversation like, Stefan, how did you think that was going to work? I don't know. Stage. We still haven't figured it out. But all that to say, so I start asking too many gosh darn questions, which is what women always do. I'm asking a bunch of questions like, dude, North Dakota, where are you in North Dakota? And he starts trying to figure out some place. And then he was like, well, when are you coming back? Well, I've got this business and I got this business to do. And then what happens is, you know how, like, when you read those articles about when you're being scammed and people are not from the United States, so they don't use the same language, idioms, and things that we use. So he starts using other types of terms and words and verbiage and things that I know is not American English. It's other English, it's not American English. And so I said, I don't think you're a real person. How could you say such a thing? We have such a connection. We're supposed to be together, all this kind of thing. Annapolis, the house, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I know that you are not who you say you are. And it's all good, you know, but I just had this image in my mind of a guy and My father used to call it CBS control, where there's like 1,000 monitors, and he's just going da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, just like sending messages to a variety of different people. So I'm happy to say I did not get scammed, but it's one of my favorite stories to tell because I see how it could happen. I'm glad it didn't happen, and it's kind of like a cautionary tale to everybody. So thank you.
That our first indicator that things were maybe not what they should be was getting the shower pic of the dude with his head back, like where she's like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, well, I understand why so many lonely people fall for this stuff, because it's like the combination of love bombing and, you know, when we're addicted to our phones and technology, like this is the way people connect. It's really sad. But anyway, Stacey didn't fall for it. She's too smart for this kind of mishigash.
And so are you all. So are you, dear listeners. Thank you so much for checking out this episode. Thank you to Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. You can check out all of our stories at stoopstorytelling.com. You can find us on social media, Stoop Storytelling. And we will be back soon with more stories from the Stoop. Stay out of trouble.